like last time. I feel like last time I was here, we didn't have this. It's been a while. So, hi, I'm Sandra. I'm definitely an alcoholic. Hey, guys. My sobriety date is 7/10/2013, and I have a temporary sponsor. Right now, I have a home group, and I sponsor other women, and, you know, try to do the fucking deal. I guess I'm supposed to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, I'm an only child. I used to use that as an excuse for my selfish and self-centeredness. Like, I'm an only child. I had to just think about myself. But I grew up in a home that was, you know, no alcoholics, nothing like that. If anything, workaholics. But I always felt very alone, always very anxious. As long as I can remember, I feel like I didn't fit in. Or I remember like getting on the bus in like kindergarten being like, I want to be her. Like I just wanted to be someone else. You know, I did not want to be myself. I did not want to feel anything. Ugh. Even now, I'm like feeling gross. But it's getting better. So I feel like I was just always like that, you know. I wanted to always kind of look back on my life and pinpoint, like, this is when I became an alcoholic, or this is the reason I'm an alcoholic. And I've come to find out that that was just my way of trying to control it, you know, and to get out of it, basically. But growing up, I, you know, suffered with asthma, and I was in and out of hospitals quite a bit. And, you know, I know that that attributed to my anxiousness, and so I just didn't, you know, just didn't do well with feeling. I just always felt out of control. I did good in school. You know, that was like the one place I shined. And, you know, that was like where I got any self-esteem from, I would say. You know, so did good in school, but I still like didn't know how to like have relationships. I didn't know how to be a good friend. I don't know if it was because I was kind of isolated, and throughout my life, like beginning when I was 5, my parents would send me to Portugal because that's where my family's from. So they put me on a plane and send me off, you know, and I was like, well, that was the trauma. I mean, they made me travel, you know, by myself when I was 5, and that's why, you know, all this stuff. And yeah, you know, most people would probably have been fine, but I was not fine. I didn't handle that well, you know. I went to Portugal, and, you know, I would go there, and I understood the language, but I was very shy and didn't want to speak it because I wouldn't speak it perfectly. So I was kind of a mute for like 2 months, and then that final third month while I was there for the summer, I would start talking, you know, and then I'd come back to America. So I always felt different for that. Like I would be in Portugal and they would be like, oh, you're American. They would call me Dollars. So like, hey, here comes Dollars. And I'm and so I didn't feel like I fit in there. And then when I, you know, all my friends here in Florida were like blonde, skinny, little hot numbers. And I was like, much darker, a little more ethnic looking when I was younger. So, you know, I just always felt like I didn't fit in, bottom line. I could be a 5 million fucking reasons why. I don't even remember the very first time. I remember like probably a couple of the few first times. But what I do know is that when I drank, I was like, hell yeah. I'm like, everything just shut the fuck up. My brain quiet. It was just like pin drop. And I was just like happy, you know? I was like, well, life ain't so bad. I'm pretty cool. You know, it was the feeling I always wanted. All that uncomfortable shit just kind of melted away. And, you know, right away, I was like, I gotta keep doing this, you know? And early on, it's, you know, I probably drank the first time I was like 12, 13, something like that. Anyway, needless to say, it's not easy to get alcohol at those ages. For me, it was much easier to get other things. So I have a lot of drugs in my story and eating disorders in my story and, you know, shopping addictions and whatever. Okay. So I would, you know, get high. And I probably, you know, started smoking weed every day at like 15. And so I've never like learned to function, you know. I'm sure people were taught, like, this is how you act. I remember the first time someone showed me how to, like, introduce myself. You say, hi, you're C? I'm like, whoa. I was, like, 21. You know, like, I had no idea how to act or interact with people. I was just so uncomfortable at all times. And so, you know, all those straight A's and the, you know, honor roll and all that stuff, by 17, that shit was gone, and I was failing out of school. So luckily, I had my parents that were great enablers, so I didn't feel a lot of consequences for a very long time. So my addiction's been drawn out over decades, you know. I came in here when I was 39. So, at, you know, 17, 18, I started failing out of school, but it was, you know, my parents always pushed the academic, so it was like, I had no choice, oh, I had a choice, but it was like obvious I was going to college, so now off to college I go. I got into some colleges, which was surprising, And obviously I didn't do well there. I started developing panic attacks and, you know, I just didn't do school. You know, I went off to school and I'm such a shithead because, I mean, I was lying. I mean, I can remember lying and stealing at like 5, you know, like from jump I was lying and stealing. But anyway, in high school, I had a friend that had lived with me and, you know, her father actually signed custody over to me to be her guardian when I was 18. So I brought her with me to college and had daddy pay for my rent. Needless to say, I didn't do college. You know, my dad pretty much paid for me to party for a couple years, and that's when, you know, I started to get some other consequences. So I got my first arrest, you know, got like 1 in 2 abortions. You know, just shit show. And, so I started getting some consequences, you know, and I would think, you know, well, it's this school or it's this city, or maybe if I just, you know, change my major, or I'll go to school or whatever, you know, all the thoughts. And I tried all those things. I tried the geographical cure because I would be able to, I mean, I would drink. I always drank. But I always thought it was the drugs that were the problem because that was like the obvious fuck up for me. Like bank accounts gone, fired, all the stuff. So I was like, okay, well, you know, as long as I don't do these drugs, then I'll be good, you know. And so I would last like a month or two. And I'd be doing all right. You know, I'd start going to school, I'd do homework, you know, get a part-time job. And then I just couldn't fucking hack it, you know, and everything would implode. And I did that continuously through my 20s. And what I think I took from that was not that, obviously, alcohol is the problem. No, what the problem I thought was is that I was a piece of shit. And that I just didn't know how to do life. And so that's the story that's always been playing in my head. And, you know, it served me as well. You know, I've used that story to get fucked up. So, so I didn't have any, you know, recognition of, you know, what the problem was really. And I finally graduated. I think it was like my fourth school I jumped around to. Finally graduated here at USF and got my first job working in a jail. I was a substance abuse counselor for juveniles. I got arrested in the Oregon system. So I ain't that
bitch.
Yeah, so I'm still drinking and using. Meanwhile, you know, giving these kids all of this referrals, this advice, these diagnoses, all the things. And I finally actually got fired from that job because I smuggled alcohol, I smuggled beer in to the jail and decided to drink beer in the closet in our office and got caught. So that was, and still, even after that, even after the training and the degree and the knowledge and all the stuff, I still didn't see that that was my problem, which is hilarious. Still, I was like, oh, I just shouldn't have smoked that weed, you know. I probably should stay off the cocaine. Bad news. You know, so totally clueless, totally unable to connect to reality, and I still have a difficult time with that. I'm very delusional still. But, I mean, I spent my whole life in Delululand, you know, and So I tried, you know, to stop with the drugs and blah, 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 and whatever, and you know, nothing really came of that. I just continued. But what I picked up was a new coping mechanism. That was anorexia. And that was fun. So, like, out of the blue, I just start losing weight, and now I'm working out, and all of a sudden, that's all I think about. I'm still drinking and using every day and passively trying to kill myself. But, you know, my new focus was on my eating disorder and staying thin and getting thin and controlling everything, you know. And so that actually brought me down to my knees first. And I entered a, like, outpatient program for that. And I remember the therapist going, tell me how you feel. And I was like, what? What are you even saying to me? She's like, how do you feel? You know, and I'm like, I don't get it. And she'd hold up the little, you know, emojis. You know, there's like a happy one, a sad one, an angry one. And I'd like have to pick which one I was. And I was so disconnected. It's just hilarious. I mean, it's funny now. It wasn't funny then. But anyway, so I was in eating disorder treatment for probably 15 years. And throughout that time, we did not address any of my alcohol and drug use, which is also a classic. I would have to fill out a food log and give it to my dietitian. And it'd be like, cookie, apple, 17 beers, 12 Oreos. You know, and no one happened to mention, like, hey, that's not normal. You know what I mean?
Eat more protein. You'll be fine.
So, yeah. So, and then, you know, I went to back to my favorite drug, which was cocaine. And so that helped my eating disorder right along. I had no desire to eat, and I was good to go. So we didn't look at that for a while. So, anyway, drinking, got another arrest. You know, kept getting fired. Actually, that's not true. I wouldn't get fired. I would leave. Or I just wouldn't take a job because it didn't work out with my hangover schedules. And so, you know, I did land one job in a clinical, in a medical school. And I was doing clinical rotations there for students, and I hung on to that job for like 7 years, man. And everything else was falling apart in my life. I mean, I had gotten married to my drug dealer that was on the couch, and I decided he needed a license and a place to live, and he needed a bank account, and he needed to improve his life. So I was going to go ahead and help him with all that. So we did that, and then I promptly left him, and so the marriage was trashed. Everyone around me was like, I'm done with you. My dad reminded me that I had canceled on his birthday the last like 8 years in a row or something insane like that. And I just didn't really, I mean, I knew I was hurting people, but I didn't really understand it. And I didn't understand it until I got sober and other people around me, you know, relapsed and or were using. And I'm like, oh, this is really no fun. And so anyway, I was just so done. I felt like I was on death's door, you know. And so I went to treatment my first time, and I was like, oh, I'm going to treatment on 311. I thought that was, like, very cool. Sorry, that is so funny. And when I got there, it wasn't like a 12-step-based treatment center. It was very, like, here's your queen-size bed, and the pool's closed today. You know, you can come to group, you can not come to group, whatever. And so while I was there, you know, I thought it was fucking vacation. I'm on vacation, away from my life. I'm just gonna put the drink down and just hang out. You know, I'll get it together. I'll break up with this psycho stalker. You know, I'll just start fresh. You know, that's what I was gonna do. And then they told me, well, you should probably go to a halfway house. I was like, well, that's great, because I lost my home. I signed my home over to my family because I could not be trusted with anything. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll go to a halfway house. And I was so delulu. I got there and I literally was like, this is where I'm going to live for the rest of my life. I was like, this is it, you know, like this is, I'm just going to live here. And I had like no ability to see anything or process what was going on around me. And I was introduced to AA, so, you know, and, I got a sponsor, and I got this, like, old lady. She was real scary, and I was like, this bitch is going to whip me into shape. Like, I kind of knew, you know, that I was a little princess, and because I had thoughts like, is somebody going to get sober from it? You know, like, I don't think I can do this. It's really hard. So she kind of was like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. You're going to follow me. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. And I followed this 70-something-year-old woman and her husband around for a month, going to the meetings they're going to and going to dinner with them. I'm like, this is not the fucking life I'm going to live, people. I am not going to be over playing shuffleboard and bingo with these people. That is not happening for me. So that was the excuse I used. I was like, I'm out. So I relapsed, and I did step one and two, and we did three, but I don't remember any of it, and then we were about to do four, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, I don't think I want to do all that. Seems really in-depth, and you know, I love avoiding things, so I was like, yeah, no. And I dipped out, relapsed, got kicked out of the halfway house, went back, and whatever, that happened for like, I don't know, months. And then finally, the last time I got kicked out, I ended up in a homeless shelter at Safety Harbor. And I was like, well, Miss College Educated, how you feel now? You know, I was like, okay. And that's like the moment of clarity. I had other ones where I was like, this is not what you're supposed to be doing with your life. You know, and I came from a family where my dad was atheist, my mom was Catholic, and I was confused. I didn't know what was going on. No one really talked to me about anything. I heard, like, my family talk. They were Catholic. I heard them talking about their spiel, and it sounded very punishing and not really anything I wanted to deal with. And so I was like, yeah, no, I don't think I want that. But I did have a moment, like a come-to-Jesus moment, where I was like detoxing in the homeless shelter, and like one pupil's big, one pupil's little, and I'm like, I think I might be having a stroke, you know? And I'm like, this is not, I don't want to do this anymore, you know? And so I asked some random chick, I was like, where's a place I can go that will keep me for a long time? And she's like, go to Turning Point. I'm like, okay. So that's what I did. I went there, and I, you know, rolled in there that first night. I was like, ugh. Friday, I'm just going to relax, I'm just going to chill, I don't have to go to groups. No, wrong, wrong facility, boo-boo, wrong facility. So I had a very rude awakening about what that place was about. But it saved my life, honestly. They taught me the program of AA. They made me get a sponsor. They made me call people. They made me get network people. And then every morning they would be like, what are your numbers? And you'd have to say, like, one call for a sponsor, one call for a network. Or if you were special like me and in the eating disorder program, you got to have two sponsors and multiple network people. So, you know, every morning they'd be like, yeah, what's your number? You know, and so I was afraid of them. And so I would call, I would make my calls. And the truth is when I got there, they were like, well, you have to go into the eating disorder program. I was like, listen, bitch, I am not going to shoot a Twinkie in my vein, okay? That's not my problem. And they didn't think that was fun either. So they were like, okay, well, then you can leave. And I'm like, oh, I don't really have anywhere to go. So I guess I'll go in the program. So anyway, went into the ED program, which was tons of fun. And you know, I learned all different kinds of things, other things. I thought I knew what I was talking about when it came to eating disorders, but they looked at it differently than what I was used to. And so they taught me how to reach out to people, get a sponsor, go to meetings, fellowship, read a book, you know, tell the truth, be honest, try to be as honest as you can, and do service. Doing service was a big one. And I was like, ain't no one want no service for me. But that became like truly where I felt connected to you guys. Like, finally, you know, I had some people around me that shared the same experiences, had been through the same pain, you know, had known the same loneliness and misery and sadness. I'm like, oh. So it's like, I think it opened up my brain a little bit, you know? And so I got a new sponsor, and I ended up staying here in Tampa because I didn't want to move back to Sarasota where I'm from, because I'm like, I don't got nothing there. But they, you know, they would bring us to these meetings down here all the time, and so this is what I did. I came out of treatment and I did the same thing. They taught me, like, the basics. And thank God, like, that's the practical action bullshit we got to do every day. I have to do that every day. And it seems so hard in the beginning, like, oh my God, I'm supposed to, like, call people and do all this stuff. And compared to all the shit that I was doing when I was ripping and running, I'm like, this is a breeze. But I didn't really think. Still, I wasn't really convinced that this would work. You know, I would see people in AA, not in the treatment center, in AA, and they were happy, and they seemed to have their life about them, and they seemed to be scrubbed with sunshine. I was like, I want that. You know, I want to be scrubbed with sunshine. And so, you know, I found this lady named Margie. She was a trip. She looked like the peaceful little sweet old lady, but let me tell you, she's an Irish Catholic, and she'll beat your ass. She's like, Sandra, I'm going to kick your ass. She's like, but just know, there's a heart on the tip of my toe. I'm like, okay. So anyway, I had had enough pain, the homeless shelters, the bullshit, the da-da-da-da-da, that I was like, fine, fuck it, I'll try it. And that's, you know, I just had to stay open-minded, willing. All right, what is it? Honest, open-minded, and willingness. I kept hearing that. I kept saying, like, I was so into these little slogans, like a good alcoholic before my relapse. I got, like, let go, let God tattooed on me. Because I knew there was something here. There's something. I knew it. But anyway, Margie made me go to meetings, and I would be in a new halfway house, and I would ride my little bicycle because I had to give my keys away. I wasn't allowed to have my car either. And I'm like, sorry, bitch, you're going to have to ride your bike. So, because I couldn't be trusted. So I would ride my little bike up to our club on Gandy, you know, and hang out again with a bunch of old people for the noon meeting. But those old people got my ass sober. They're like, "Aw, bless your heart. Come on in. Sit down," you know. And I started doing the steps. And there was nights and days where I was like, "I can't fucking do this anymore. Not one more second." And I'd be like, "Okay, well, I'm going to go to bed." So I'd go to bed at 5 o'clock. And I'd wake up the next day and I'm like, "Ta-da, another day sober." Yes. I'm like, whatever it took. Because Margie told me, she's like, "We don't drink or drug no matter what." And I was like, "Oh, fine, okay, no matter what. Doesn't matter, doesn't matter." And she told me a story about how she had one of her sons die in her arms from a drug overdose. And she stayed sober through that. And I was like, "Oh, that's super fucking rude if I would go get drunk over like some lady cutting in line in Publix or something. This poor woman's been through like all this." So I was like, "Okay, we don't get drunk no matter what. Gotcha." And, you know, again, I would do steps 1, 2, 3. We did step 3 and we kneeled together in the back of the clubhouse. I'm like, "This is so weird. Like, what are we doing?" You know, like it didn't mean anything to me at the time. Like, I didn't know. I just did what you told me to do and I was just doing the actions. And, you know, we started doing step 4, and she's like, "You know, if there's a name for it, it's been done. You're not that special." I'm like, okay. So, you know, she made me understand that she had crazy too, and that all of us do, and that, you know, nothing that I've done or no way that I felt or whatever is any different from anyone else. You know, I am not, that ego is not my amigo. It is just not. It tells me I'm super special, and really I'm pretty average, you know. And so she said, "And don't worry about, like, getting it all done," like, because I'm kind of a perfectionist, obviously, ED. So she's like, "Don't worry about it." She's like, "You just do what you can remember, you know, and then it'll bubble up and you can swift it away." And so that's what I did. And we did my 4th step piecemeal, like a little bit at a time. And after I did that, I remember walking into the noon R club and looking at everyone around like I had just gotten, like, okay to be in a secret society. It was so weird. I was like, yeah. Like, I don't know why I felt this relief. Like, holy crap, I did the work. Like, I did it this time. You know what I mean? Like, you guys did it. I did it too. You know? And that's really when I felt, like, the closest to this program. Because for a long time, I feel like most of us did. But I did all the self-help books. I did all the, you know, like it talks about more about alcoholism. I tried everything, you know. But I did want to do those steps. And then the times that I didn't want to do it, I was like, listen, I would tell myself, like, alcohol and drugs are still there. You know, I'm going to go get fucked up tomorrow. But for today, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'll get fucked up tomorrow. But today, I'm not going to do that. And then same with the steps. I was like, I have to finish these steps. I have to. If I want to get fucked up after I finish these steps, it's still there. And for a long time, I did like the AA buffet is what I like to call it. It's like you get your little plate and like I'll take a serving of fellowship, take a serving of meetings, I'll take half a sponsor, you know, like ew. So I wouldn't eat everything on the menu, you know, I would just pick and choose. And so I was like going to meetings and fellowshipping, but I wasn't being honest, I wasn't talking to people about what was really going on, I wasn't accountable, I didn't even know what that word meant. Like, I had no idea what accountable meant. Anyway, so, you know, and finally, like, someone's like, "You gotta do the steps." Like, huh? Like, this is, I'd never fucking heard it before. It's a 12-step program, Sandra, you gotta do the 12 steps. I was like, okay, that's legit. So, all right, if after I do these 12 steps, I still want to drink, then that's what I'm going to do. So that was my grand plan. And shocker, didn't want to do that after I did the 12 steps, you know. And I don't know what time it is. What do we got going on here? I got 15 more minutes. Okay, anywho. So, you know, while I was in treatment, I talked about, you know, why I thought I didn't deserve to be sober, why I think there's a higher power out there, but I'm not, they don't really care about me enough to like give me anything that I want or that's worthy. I'm not worthy, you know, the old I'm not worthy. And I used to write, there would be a blackboard in there and you would write your fears down, you know, on that blackboard so you can erase your fears. And so, you know, I would write, I can't stay sober, I'm too fucked up for this program to work, you know, I'll never have a family, you know, I'm just going to be old and alone and die by myself, like all the things. And so, come to find out, none of those things happened. And my first year, I started dating somebody in the program. You know, we do these things. And that was much more complicated, and I should have listened to everybody at the time, you know, because I was, I don't think I should have been in a relationship till at least 6-7 years, if that. I'm not even sure I'm really ready for one right now. I'm not, yeah, it's. No. So anyway, I did the things I wasn't supposed to do with the romantic life. But what I did do is, you know, I kept hanging out with Margie. I kept doing what she told me to do. I tried to get a job back in, like, corporate world, and that did not work out because I lost my shit. I was like, I can't take it, you know. So yeah, I wasn't ready for that. So we, like, backtracked a little bit. And I then got a job at a doggy daycare, which a lot of folks here in the Tampa location at Camp Bow Wow were in recovery. And so it was amazing. It was like 6 people, drug addicts, alcoholics, all like barely sober, playing with dogs. I mean, really, it's not, there's nothing better than that. It was like a great, and I kept that job for like 3 years, which is kind of funny, because I was scared to go out into the real world after that. I thought I'd be struck drunk somehow. But it was perfect. You know, it was a job I didn't have to like think too much about. I could just stay in the present, and I could learn how to be a woman that's not fucked up all the time. And if you're anything like me, you know, living like that is, you know, putting down the drugs and the alcohol and doing this soul searching and living this program, this is very different from what I'm used to, you know, like everything in my life was revolved around drinks and drugs and taking a shower, I would drink and drug, doing this, like, you know, anything. So learning to live sober, it takes a second. And I wanted it to be like meow. Like, I put down the alcohol, and now I should be puppy dogs, rainbows, everything should be great, and I had to be reminded that that's not how it works. It took me, like, decades to get to where I was. It's going to take a second to rebuild, or to build, because it was never we're building. And I remember I would call my sponsor, and I'd be like, I can't even grocery shop, I'm freaking out, you know, and she's like, well, how sober are you? How long have you been sober? And I'm like, 8 months. And she's like, you're like an 8-month-old. What do you expect 8-month-olds to do? Do you expect them to grocery shop? And I'd be like, no. And she's like, see, so chill out, you know, it's fine. Chill out, you're okay. And I had to be reminded all the time, you're okay. This is a process. You are okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. Like, I needed people to tell me I was okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. Yes, you're okay. And so it was a trip, right? And I, like I said, I had those fears. I thought, like, I would never, you know, have a child, especially because, like, during my using and drinking, I had gotten pregnant 4 times, had 4 abortions. I was, like, very ashamed of that. I felt very just not worthy, and I had a lot of guilt. And so I never thought, like, I would have, like, a family, you know. Well, the guy that I started dating, he also is in the program, and he relapsed a bunch, but we fixed him. Right. So we ended up, I ended up getting pregnant, and I think at that time I was 41. I was 41 years old. He was still in the halfway house. I mean, come on. Right? I was still married, mind you. Still married. This is like as white trash as we get. Still married. Hadn't talked to him in 7 years. So still married. Got pregnant. Had to go to court for the divorce. Pregnant. And they're like, we can't grant you that divorce unless this father comes and says it's the father. And so this poor guy had to come to court with me and be like, yeah, that's my kid. And so anyway, all of that to say that miracles do happen. No, all that to say that, you know, it wasn't pretty to get where I am today. It's never pretty, right? I don't, like, I'm still, it talks about us in the big book, us alcoholics, that we're defiant, we're, you know, childish, that, you know, I'm all of the things, right? And I am still all those things. I still, to this day, do not want to handle my emotions. Just recently, my old sponsor passed away, and I had known her since I got sober in 2014. And so she passed away, and, you know, it's probably, I don't know, she passed away, what, December, actually, Christmas Day. And so I didn't start crying about that until, like, 2 weeks ago, or, like, a week and a half ago. And then when I did, I was offended. I was pissed. I was like, oh, no, that's not how this is going to work. I was just going to plug along and not have feelings about it, right? So I still try to avoid my feelings, and I'm still very surprised when they show up. I'm still very delusional. And but the good thing is that you guys now tell me when I'm being delulu, because I need you guys. Am I okay? Sometimes I'm not okay, and you guys need to be like, you're not okay. You're manipulating. You're not okay. You're lying. What's your motive, Sandra? You know? So you guys get to help me be a sober woman with integrity. Also didn't know what that meant. And thank God, you know, what I get now out of this program and out of you guys and through doing the steps and through, you know, doing all the things that are suggested is I finally get that feeling of ease and comfort that I've been searching for throughout my whole life. Like, all of that was to get here. Like, this is what I was looking for. Like, oh, shit. Well, I put myself through a lot of pain. But now I understand why people say I'm a grateful alcoholic, because I am grateful now. Now I finally have a new way to live, and I have a connection to a higher power, and understand that life is more than me. I can be a person among people, and service work has taught me that, you know, there's a writing why we were chosen. If you haven't read it, read it. It's really good. It just talks about why God chose alcoholics. Because we are like the purveyors. Only each other can get each other sober, right? Like, a normie comes up to me and tells me about alcoholism, and I close my ears immediately. So it takes me to stay sober, like our primary purpose, stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety, and that's what the point is. That's why we're here. That's why I'm here. I don't know about you guys, that's why I'm here. But I'm really grateful for all you guys. I hated having to come tonight because I think I want to throw up still, but I'm very appreciative. So I'm out.
Thank you.